up some knowledge about other issues within taking care of people on Shabbos. But the primary focus is going to be, how do we categorize different dental needs, and what are the halachic concerns that are involved with different types of treatments? Not really sure how in depth to go with this, because it's a fun topic that you could spend a lot of time on. But on the other hand, there are many things that I'm hoping to still get to in this semester, and noting that this is already class number 20 out of what I think is like 28, and one of those is going to be the review for the final. We're getting there. So I need to not do everything, which is too bad. The first topic we're going to talk about within dentistry is cases that might qualify as chole sheyesh bo sakana. And that example that we're going to bring is the case of an infected tooth. Now, you look at it and say, it's an infected tooth. Is that really a life or death matter? Yes. And the answer is, you bet. So I gave you one example in source number one. There are more that I could bring, but I figured one is good. Ludwig's angina. This is from the Cleveland Clinic website. Bacteria from an abscessed tooth or a mouth injury can cause Ludwig's angina. This rare type of cellulitis can spread quickly to your tongue and neck. Swelling can occur that cuts off breathing. This is a life-threatening emergency. Thanks for clarifying. Most people recover with antibiotics and surgery to drain the abscess. Rarely the condition is fatal. Not because it can't be fatal, but because, generally speaking, this is the sort of thing that sends somebody to doctor, dentist, hospital, and then they take care of it. It's eminently treatable, but it has to be treated. That's the point. But once you see the treatments, you recognize where the Shabbos issues come in, right? Antibiotics is a medication issue. Surgery is potentially de'oraisa territory, all the different aspects involved in doing the surgery. So this can be labeled pikuach nefesh directly. In other words, there is a visible threat to this person's life. And that seems to be the way the Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham takes it in the Nishmas Avram. Take a look at source number two. He says the following. Im sovel mach ovim chazakim bioter. If a person is suffering from especially strong pain, kach sheyesh chashash shel daleket o mugles, such that there is concern for infection or pus, o im yesh nefichut b'chanichim, or chanichayim, or if there's inflammation in the gums, v'afilu lo kevim, even without pain in that case, tzrichim lechalel es hashabbos lefi hatzorach. They have to violate Shabbos as needed, and that goes back to the point that I made before when we were doing the review of the midterm, as needed. You don't override, de'oraisas when you don't need to, but whatever is needed, you do. Va'filu be'isurei Torah, including biblical prohibitions, ki matzav kaseh yachol liot misukan, because a situation like this could be dangerous. Clear? Everyone follows? A lot of typing. This is the straight case of pikuach nefesh, meaning I know this person has a medical condition which could be a threat to life, and therefore it's a chole sheyesh bo sakana. Do what you need to do to save them. The other way to look at this, bless you. The other way to look at this as chole sheyesh bo sakana is because it is makash al chalal. What is a makash al chalal? Anybody remember? Internal injury, correct. Meaning, even if I don't know that this is potentially a life-threatening infection, just the fact that there's an injury going on inside may justify overriding Shabbos on a d'oraisa level. We already saw that earlier, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, right? They talked about getting cut with metal. Right, that discussion. Take a look at source number three, Gemara in Shabbos, Kuftes Amud Aleph. Ravina ikla lebe Rav Ashi. Ravina goes to Rav Ashi's house. Chazye de dricha lechamra agaba de kar'e. He saw that a donkey had trampled Rav Ashi's foot. V'yasiv katsamas le b'chala, and he saw that Rav Ashi was soaking it in vinegar, not the donkey soaking the foot. So, Amar le, lo sava la mar la hada amar of Hillel chala lo. He said, don't you agree with what Rav Hillel said, that you're not allowed to soak your feet in vinegar on Shabbos? This is considered medical treatment. So his response was, Amar le gav hayad v'gav haregel sha'ani. He said, the back of the hand and the back of the foot are a different story. The top of the foot are a different story. Meaning there's a level of risk involved. And you're right, this does qualify as medical care. And normally we would not do it on Shabbos. But I'm doing it on Shabbos here because it's actually considered dangerous. This type of injury is considered dangerous. And then we get the continuation. Da'amar Rav Adar Bar Masna Amar Rav, because Rav Adar Bar Masna said, quoting Rav, Gav hayad v'gav haregel harein kamaka shel chalal, the back of the hand, the top of the foot, are considered like an internal wound. U'machalin alein as a Shabbos, and you violate Shabbos for them. I'm not getting into the question of what's wrong with the top of the foot and the back of the hand. Why are they equated with that? Internal injuries, we understood. There's real danger from what's going on inside. How dangerous to the person's life is either of these? Honestly, it's unclear to me. But I only brought this for the equation to the internal injury, because it highlights for us internal injuries are considered pikuach nefesh situations. And what we have to get to is the definition of internal. Are teeth things internal? So that's where we're going with this. Bailey.
Could you just repeat what his response was after he asked him why he was doing that?
Yeah, his response was that the back of the hand and the top of the foot, in this case it's the top of the foot that got trampled by the donkey, are considered life and death situations. They're considered like the internal injury. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
So what qualifies as internal? Make the argument. Teeth infections, are they internal or not internal?
Yes.
What defines internal then?
In the body. Not seen. Like in the gums.
It's inside the gum. Okay. So that's a reason to call it internal, is it's inside the gum that the infection is taking place. So that means that if you could actually see it, if the gums were all swollen and green, that would not be internal?
You were not going to see the injury inside of place, though.
You can't see the injury that's inside. Okay. Plausible. Yes, Bailey.
Because it's in your mouth?
Maybe it's because it's inside the mouth. That already makes it internal. So good. Take a look at source number 4. Shulchan Aruch. We've seen this Shulchan Aruch before. Komaka shel chalal, any internal wound, internal injury, dahainu, meaning mehashinayim vilifnim, from the teeth and inward. I don't know, maybe we didn't see this already. I thought we did. Vishinayim atzman bichlal, including the teeth. Mechalin alein es haShabbos, you override Shabbos for it. Vidavka shniskalkel echad me'avarim ha'pnimim machmas maka o bua l'kayotze baze avo mechushim ein nikroi maka. He clarifies and says that's where one of the internal parts of the body is damaged via a wound or via some kind of an infection, a blister, something. But a mechush, an ache, does not qualify. So writes the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber. Rabbi Yosef Karo says that internal begins at the teeth and gums. I'm skipping the Ramah. I'm going to come back to the Ramah in a little bit. But that's the Shulchan Aruch statement. Bailey.
I have a question.
Yeah.
That source was saying that, like, you can't, if you just have, like, an ache and it doesn't really count, that would be considered meichush. But if there's, like, a wound or a blister or whatever, then that would be considered...
Then it becomes suddenly cholesh yesh bo sakana, correct.
Right. So then how do you differentiate in regards to teeth? Because usually when people like experience pain or an injury in their mouths, it starts with a toothache.
Right.
And so therefore it escalates, and then they find like larger things, and then there's more problems and whatever. So it usually starts at the baseline.
Right. So a person who's not sure, right, they really don't know, is this an ache or is this, you know, a sign of something worse, is responsible to go to somebody who can, you know, analyze and diagnose, who can ask them the right questions. Meaning, I think you and I have that kind of question because we're not dentists. I speak for myself. I'm not a dentist. But I think that a dental professional will be able to ask you things like, did you eat something that was cold? Did you whatever? And, you know, figure out, is this an ache that we can associate with something more benign?
So this is talking about more like where you can actually physically see see the issue or if you know that it's there.
Not necessarily see it, but you have a sense of this is serious or this isn't serious. It's just like what we said regarding, you know, other conditions. If you have reason to doubt, we err on the side of caution. But where you know, yeah, this is nothing, I get this all the time, whatever, then you should wait. If you look at number, where was it? It's not on there. Hang on. Oh, right, I know why. It's a Mishnah Brura number 6, but you need to see number 5 first. That's why. Number 5 is the Gemara in Yuma. Rabbi Yochanan Chash B'Tzafidna. You remember the discussion in Yuma that we had about overriding Shabbos to save lives and all those different opinions and all of that, right? Because the 8th parak in Yuma is concerned with the question of fasting on Shabbos when it's dangerous for a person, and gets from there into all these discussions about overriding, not on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur, excuse me, but it gets into all these discussions about overriding Shabbos and overriding Yom Kippur for health reasons. So you get other conversations as part of that. So Rabbi Yochanan Chash B'Tzafidna. Rabbi Yochanan was in pain because of something called Tzafidna. What is Tzafidna? So Rashi says, a disease of the teeth and gums beginning in the mouth and ending in the intestines. It is dangerous. I once gave a shiur on this to dentists, and they gave me a diagnosis of what this could be. Like, there are things that are known now that fit what Rashi is describing. So it's some kind of a disease that starts in the mouth and ends in the intestines, and it's really dangerous. So Azal Gabada Hahi Matronisa, he went to a Roman matron who evidently was known for providing cures for dental issues. Abdulai Milsa Chamsha Umale Shabsa. So she prepared a treatment for him on Thursday and Friday. Amar La B'Shabbos Mai. Then he asked her, what do I do to prepare this on Shabbos when I'm not going to come to you? What do I do for Shabbos? And that leads to a whole discussion in the Gemara. This is one of those discussions about ongoing care. You started your treatment on Thursday, are you allowed to continue it on Shabbos? But that's not why I brought it. I brought it because of the Mishnah Brura in source number 6. The Mishnah Brura is based on that Gemara. The Kol Shekein Imchala, he's commenting on source number 4. So we're commenting on the line in the Shulchan Aruch about internal things starting from the teeth. He says, V'kol shekein imchala mekom moshav hashinayim. Certainly if one is ill, in the place where the teeth sit. Dahainu hachanichim, meaning the chanichim, which are gums. Bevadai heim bechla maka shebeso chalal haguf. That counts as an internal wound. Chanichim can mean the palate or the gums. My understanding is that the way you use the term, it certainly is gums. Whether the Mishnah Brura did is a good question. But the practical application of this is that even if I don't have my first reason for calling this person cholesh yesh bo sakana, specifically that I know about dental infections, and I know that dental infections can actually be life and death, even if I don't know that, I still have the argument of this person has a maka shel cholal. This is an internal injury, and therefore I'm warranted in treating them as a cholesh yesh bo sakana. You follow the fact that there are two different reasons to label them that, right? One is, I know that oral infections are dangerous. And number 2 is, this is considered an internal injury, and therefore, even if I don't know anything about oral infections, I know that it's a cholesh yesh bo sakana. Those are two different ways to approach it. Natalie.
What is the Mishnah Berurah adding to the Shulchan Aruch? Like, what's the difference? That he mentioned from the teeth of the words, why is the Mishnah specifying?
Because the Mishnah Berurah's term of the teeth being teeth and inwards doesn't clarify for me what about the gums.
Oh, so like,
he's giving us more definition of what qualifies as internal.
Okay.
Yeah. And the reason why I brought you number 5 is because that's what he's based on. Almost. Almost. With one clarifying note. Right? What's the clarifying note?
No, it's not.
Correct. Source number 7. This one applies to teeth, but we've actually said it in other contexts as well. B'Tzafidna. This is also the Mishnah we were talking. In the case of Tzafidna, Afilu hachole v'harofei omrim eino tzarech lechilol, Even if the patient and the doctor say you don't need to do anything, Amrinan de'ein b'kiyin b'zeh, we still say they don't know what they're talking about. The patient doesn't know and the doctor doesn't know. So there. Kimakubal biyad chazal shesakanehi, because chazal said this is dangerous. So tzafidna is actually unique. We're going to override the dentist and say, treat this thing now because the Gemara says so. Ubishaar ke'ev hashinayim, dechashiv kemaka shalchalal bistam mechalalin, for other aches of the teeth, which we say these are considered internal injuries, internal wounds. If we don't know anything, if it's stam, if the doctor hasn't said anything, then we are mechalil, we would override Shabbos. Uchsha omer harofeo achole she'eno tzarech ein mechalalin. But if the doctor or the patient say, no, this is nothing, I've had this before, or the doctor says, I've diagnosed this before, I know this, there's really no concern, then we're not going to override Shabbos. So for tzafidna, we would, in the event that you encounter whatever this thing tzafidna is, then we're going to care for the patient, we're going to override Shabbos to do so, even though we don't actually think that it's so dangerous, this is unique. But generally speaking, this category number two, as opposed to category number one, where we say it's, you know, this thing is dangerous. Category number two is just, this is considered internal, and therefore we treat it as dangerous. If the dentist says, I've seen this before, this is not dangerous, then we're not going to override Shabbos. We said that also when we talked about Makar Shacholol in general, when I introduced the topic, but that's the idea. Are we clear? Understood? Yeah, Daniela.
I'm a little unclear because earlier source 6 you said was based on the Gemara Numa or on the
On the Tzafidna case. Yeah. I mean, he's commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, but his statement about the gums is based on the Tzafidna situation, which is a gum-based issue.
In the Shulchan.
Tzafidna was in the Gemara in source number 5.
Hang on. Oh, but he's commenting.
Yeah, his comment, because that's what the Mishnah Berurah does, appears on the Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah.
Are we going to define tzafidna?
Nope. No.
How can you apply?
Right. So I did mention that when I gave Shir on this topic to dentists, they gave me some theories about what tzafidna could be.
Oh, it's that disease.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that was.
Yeah. That's the one. So, you know, I'm loath to adopt the dentist's evaluation of this and say, well, because Rashi says it fits this pattern, therefore that's what this is. You know, when you're talking about an illness, what you're telling me, override Shabbos, even though the dentist says it's not necessary, I'm a little hesitant. As a general principle, we're not so confident in the medicine that shows up in the Gemara that we're going to now apply it in that way. On the other hand, the Chafetz Chaim was pretty firm, and he said too. Last note in terms of, or not last note, but second limiting factor. We've already noted this, but I want to show you, how the Ramah frames it. Go back to source number 4, please. The Shulchan Aruch said, "Mechushim, pains are not called a maka," right? For calling this a maka shel chalal. So now look at the Ramah, Hagah, the third line in the Hebrew and in the English, for that matter. Mihu, however, Misha Choshesh Beshinav Umitzta'er Alav Lahotzi'o. If a person has a serious toothache and he's in such pain he wants to get rid of the tooth, he believes that that's what's going to cure it, right? Welcome to 16th century Poland. This is how we're going to solve your problem. So, Omer Le'enu Yehudi Lahotzi'o. So you tell a non-Jew to be the one to extract it, meaning we're not calling it a Choleshiyesh Bo Sakana. We're saying, get a non-Jew to be the one to do this. So I think what we're doing is we're saying that, well, you could really read it in two different ways, I guess, right? You could read it as Shabbos is dechuya. This is a Chol HaShiyesh Bo Sakana, but it doesn't need to be pulled out right away. So go to a non-Jew, let a non-Jew be the one to pull it out. Or you could read him as saying, pain in the tooth doesn't really qualify that way. It's only pain. It's not an injury. And therefore, it's Chol HaShiyesh Bo Sakana. And therefore, I'm going to ask a non-Jew to be the one to do it, because as we're going to discuss, extracting a tooth may involve violation of a deoraisa. So I think what he's probably saying is that if it's just pain in the tooth and it's not an injury, it's chol she'ein bo sakana. I believe that's what the Rama is saying. Because it's dechuya. If it's chol she'ein bo sakana, but I don't need to like pull it out right now, I'm going to get a dentist anyway. Better get a non-Jewish dentist. That's his argument. Hannah, you were going to say?
No, you answered it.
Okay. Again, this is all within the second category, the category that says it's maka shal chalal, as opposed to the category of I know this thing is dangerous, where I don't know that it's dangerous, but it's an internal injury. I'm going to treat it as dangerous unless I know that it's actually safe, or it's not an injury; it's just a function of pain. But Shabbos is dechuya. If they don't need me to do it, then, because you have time, you have an hour, go find someone who isn't Jewish to do it.
So you're not finding a non-Jew because you yourself can't do it. You're finding a non-Jew because they're verbal.
Correct. That would be the argument.
I'm just confirming what you said. If it's just pain, it's chol she'ein bo sakana?
If it's just pain, that's what the Shulchan Aruch is telling me. Is that it's not a chol she'ein bo sakana, it's not a maka, it's just, the person's in some pain.
And that's why we're asking.
And that's one explanation. The other explanation is what I just said to Rebecca, right? That it is chol she'ein bo sakana, but Shabbos is dechuya, so you don't need to do it. But I tend to think it's the latter. I tend to think it's because we're viewing it as chol she'ein bo sakana. I think that's probably correct. Clear? No, it had to be like bedridden, whatever, in order to get that far.
It's that bad that he wants to pull it out.
Yeah, I mean, he wants his tooth gone. Interestingly, the Mishnah Berurah has a comment on this. I didn't bring it for you. But the Mishnah Berurah says that we don't consider tooth extraction to be a tested means of treating medical problems.
Really?
Yeah. So writes the Mishnah Berurah. Vinegar for what?
I'm saying, like, I feel like soaking vinegar like that is considered medicine, but then...
No, I don't mean it in terms of... Not in terms of what you're allowed or not allowed to do on Shabbos. Not medical treatment that way. He's saying, like, if your doctor says to you to extract a tooth, remember we said that when you talk about suffix, right, there were two types of suffix, pikuach nefesh. There was suffix, the person needs it, and then there was suffix that the treatment works. So the Mishnah Berurah says extracting a tooth is suffix that the treatment works. He's saying, I'm not so sure that this is actually medical treatment, this business of pulling people's teeth out.
But
now,
but you can't out, now it doesn't hurt, problem solved. No? Like, how's that
not? Maybe.
Can you bring it in?
So did Tylenol?
If your tooth is hurting because of something in the gut, you're telling me your tooth is not going to help.
Well, it may, actually. Exposing the infected area to air, easier to clean, I don't know.
Easier to clean it. Like,
yeah.
Can you then use that for Shabbos? Is that what you're saying?
Is what I'm saying?
Like, if it's not considered treatment to pull the tooth, therefore you can do it on Shabbos.
No. It's the other way. It's saying this is less approved because it involves a deoraisa and it may not actually work. That's the argument. The question is that meaningful in an age when our dental practice is to extract teeth for certain circumstances? Maybe not all circumstances, but for certain circumstances, we do recommend that. So what are the treatment options for this patient who has the infected tooth, and what would we actually do? So I talked to an endodontist, and he said, you have the following options. And again, I am not a dentist. I am not your dentist. Ask your dentist, for practical guidance. But he said, either incise and drain, meaning cut into the gum, remove infected pulp, and drain any infected fluid. Yeah, sorry for anybody. I gave you all these warnings before the mental health discussions. I didn't do anything about carving up people's mouths.
I'm so sorry for everyone, but can you please repeat that?
cut into the gum.
Wait, what source is that?
Yeah. It is not. It is not a source. It is. No, this matters because without it, you won't understand what's coming next. Yes. This is treatment options. This is what a dentist, or at least the endodontist I consulted, said. Cut into the gum, remove the infected pulp, and drain any infected fluid. That's approach number one. Approach number two is pull the tooth and initiate antibiotics. So in other words, approach number one sounds really, really painful, but you can save the tooth. Approach number two, on the other hand, involves less of the cutting, right? You're just pulling out the tooth and you start the patient on antibiotics. On a weekday, it's not Shabbos, no Shabbos considerations whatsoever, patients might prefer the first approach in order to keep their natural teeth, right? They'll deal with the fact that somebody is cutting into their mouth and all of that in order to save the tooth. But it also involves more malachos, right? If it's Shabbos, taking approach A means that I do more malacha. So the question now is, and this is where I said to you, we're going to discuss some things that are broader than just dental issues. This is a major question. Does the surgeon have the option of using approach A because that's the one that patients normally like? Or is the surgeon required, because Shabbos is dechuya, to use approach B, which will minimize the malacha that you have to do? Do you take the treatment that the patient prefers because there, it's a pikuach nefesh situation, or do I say no, you have to minimize and take the approach that the patient does not prefer? Sir?
Could it be considered like a situation?
So we're going to get to the question of sakanas eiver next. That'll be our next area. But let's assume for now that it's not sakanas eiver to lose the tooth. Let's work with that as our assumption for now. So what would you say? You go with the patient's preference, or you go with Hilchos Shabbos? This is all of this is dealing with the infected tooth area.
It's not like a specific occasion.
I think it's pretty specific. It's an infection in the tooth.
I know, but they said like a bunch.
No, it's an infection. That's what it is. Yeah, Rebecca.
Can we say like a third approach is of secretion?
It's not a psikresha if it is the action you're doing. Meaning the malacha is the action you're doing. It's not a side effect.
It's not like you're doing something and as a result of
what is happening. Right. Right. One could imagine someone trying to apply that otherwise in very interesting ways. Yeah. So at the time when I first gave a shiur on this, I actually... I was living in Toronto, so I emailed Rabbi Scheischachter for his father to ask what's the halacha in this circumstance. So his answer was option A is allowed. You could do option A. His reason was that it's not considered a deoraisa, which we're going to have to talk about, to pull the tooth. That's number one. And number two, because it is considered a dangerous situation and we do whatever the needs of the patient are.
Wait, that's B.
Yeah, but
that's B.
Sorry?
That's option B. I thought A was when you cut it and keep it.
Sorry. No. I'm sorry, you're right. That's what he meant. I'm sorry. You are correct. Option A is allowed because the malachos that you're doing, there are more malachos to do in cutting into the gums and all of that, but it's not a deoraisa. Even though you are causing bleeding by doing this, it's not a deoraisa, and the patient is in danger. You're right. I got that wrong.
Isn't the first one the gross one?
Yeah, that's the gross one. But it's gross, but the patient likes it because they keep their tooth in the end.
Right, but I'm saying, I thought you just said that it is malacha.
Right, so he's saying it's not a deoraisa. Why wouldn't it be a deoraisa when you're cutting into the gums? So I would expect that the reason why it's not a deoraisa is because it's malacha shenitzricha legufa, meaning the act of causing bleeding is actually a big discussion. What exactly is the malacha involved in causing bleeding on Shabbos? But the assumption is, if I remember correctly, that it's that you actually want the blood. Here, you're cutting into this person's gums not to get the blood. You're not doing anything with the blood. Your point is to be able to drain the pus and stuff that's, you know, that's inside. So that's why it's not a d'oraisa. That's why it's malacha shenitzvicha legufa. It's malacha shenitzvicha legufa. It's not the way of the malacha d'oraisa. So that would be one. She'ena tzvicha legufa. Yeah, I think we did it in the beginning of the year, but it might have been before you got here. You started a little bit after. Because the normal malacha of drawing blood is to get the blood, right? Like with the chilazon, wanting to get the blood or whatever secretion this is from the chilazon that you're actually going to use. That's your de'oraisa. You're not doing that here. You're just
blood.
No. Yeah.
On the other part, you said that it's allowed because you can do whatever you would do during the week. I thought like if you come to school, you're supposed to also try to not do.
Right. So that goes back to what we had said when we were navigating that paradox initially. You're right. And that's that we do whatever is normally done during the week. However, if we have a clear sense that by doing it differently now, we will not endanger the patient at all, and we have the time to do this properly and not, you know, create any risks, then yeah, because Shabbos is dechuya, we'll avoid doing it. But where we have, you know, where we have any doubt about the impact of our changing the protocol, then we're just going to do it the way it is done during the week, the standard of care, whatever that is, whatever is normally done. Whatever is normally done for this patient during the week. So we bring in a patient to the hospital, and the patient has 104 fever and is frail, and we definitely need this patient to be hydrated. We definitely need to take the patient's vital signs, you know, all those things in order to monitor and figure out what's going on. Why is this patient's fever high, and how can we stabilize them? So along the way, right, the patient needs their hospital bed adjusted because it's hard for us to get to, you know, the IV, or because it's uncomfortable or whatever it is. We're going to do that on behalf of the patient. Like, we'll do that as needed. I walk into the room to help take care of the patient along with a non-Jewish doctor, and it's, the light is dim in the room. It's better for the non-Jewish doctor to be the one to turn on the light. You know, unless I have a sense that, you know, this is time sensitive, we need it done, in which case I'll be the one to turn on the light. That's the difference that I'm trying to.
Yeah, but like here there's also another option here, and it's like less bad than the other one.
Right. So I think that's why he combined it with the fact that it's not a d'oraisa. Mm-hmm. I think that helped. The fact that the malacha that you're doing is not a d'oraisa definitely, yeah, I mean, he mentioned it as a factor.
Drastic difference to lose a tooth with your own body. Like, it's not just like, oh, turn the light, like, whatever.
Yeah, I'm remembering the example we brought, something about, like, your, I think either your eye or your ear.
The eye was considered. Yeah.
And it was like, oh, like, the reason we're going to say you can save the organ or the limb is only because it might be connected to the heart. It wasn't because, like, oh, we want to save your ear or your eye. Whatever.
Well, because we were talking about malacha d'oraisa.
And this isn't
d'oraisa. Yeah. I mean, keep in mind, for Sakana Xavier, like what you're describing, we would have a non-Jew do it. It's just that we won't do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One more note on this, and then I'll give you a break for a couple of minutes. Is there an obligation? The person has this infected tooth, right? Their gum is swollen. There's a lot of pain. They know they have an issue. Do they have an obligation to go to a non-Jewish dentist, or do they have the ability to go to a Jewish one?
Is it like emergency dentist? So that would make sense.
Maybe. Take a look at source number 8. This is Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer. The Hebrew's at the bottom of one side, English at the top of the next side. He says, Lo'or kol ha'amur benira de nidon ha'she'elash lefanenu bedaleket moch ha'shein ha'goremet leke'evim azim bilti nisbalim d'nechshav shapir kamaka shalchalo. He says, based on all that has been said, in the question that is before us, the question of an infection in the gums, which is, and he's quoting, causing great pain, great intolerable pain, he says that is called maka shel chalal, like we said. Vim kain ein rofei akum im ein rofei akum matsui. If there is no non-Jewish doctor around, o she'ein haratzon lismoch al rofei akum, or he doesn't want to rely on. There is a non-Jewish doctor around, but he's not the doctor he knows, right? People in extreme circumstances like this really get a lot of comfort from going to a dental professional or a medical professional they trust. Vein derech acheres kima yidei rofei Yisrael ubasiyas malacha de'oraisa b'ripui v'hashkata. And there's no other way other than to go to a Jewish dentist who's going to do de'oraisas in terms of taking care of the patient, numbing the patient, obatzas hashein, or in removing the tooth. Da'azai shaper yesh lahatir zos. So he says you could permit it. He can go to the Jewish doctor. He'd rather the non-Jewish doctor, Rav Waldenberg. But he says, in the event that you don't trust the non-Jewish doctor for whatever reason, you would be able to go to the Jewish one. Clear? Now, there's another issue that comes up here, which I'm not going to discuss here. I reserve the right to come back to it on Monday. I'm still thinking about it. There's a major question that comes up when you deal with all of these cases where you go to a non-Jewish doctor. Let's imagine the scenario. You went to the non-Jewish doctor. The non-Jewish doctor says, okay, I'm going to now inject something to numb the tooth. I'm now going to cut into the gum to take stuff out, whatever it is. I need you to say, ah. I need you to move your head to the left. I need you to whatever it is. Do you have any liability for the fact that you are assisting in the process?
But you're the one who's sick.
Yes, that is true. But my question is, have you solved the problem by going to a non-Jew if you are actually involved in the action anyway? You're not involved? If you don't say, nothing's happening.
But I'm saying, you're not doing the malacha.
So,
you say it's grama?
There's a better word for it. What's the word for this in Hebrew? No. Misayea. Misayea means assisting. You are helping with this medical act. And the question is, do we say misayea ein bo mamash? Assisting is not substantive. Or misayea yesh bo mamash? Or do we say the assist that you give is substantive? This has all sorts of ramifications in medical treatment on Shabbos. Example, somebody goes into the hospital on Shabbos or is in the hospital before Shabbos, doesn't matter, and the doctor decides that they need to order x-rays, right, or MRI or whatever it is. Well, I'm not doing anything as the patient, right? They're just running the machine. But I stand in front of the machine, I turn whichever way they tell me to turn. Is that called being part of the malacha? Is that called assisting? So we might get to that. I'm not doing it as part of this, but it might come up eventually. Ayala.
Maybe it's a good doraisa, if you're allowed to override it. Wouldn't that just be the standard of care then? You just happen to be involved in it. But if you're going on the approach and saying that depending on the injury, you just go by the standard of care, yeah, you might be involved, but that is the standard of care.
Oh, I'm not saying that you don't end up doing it, but it will have ramifications in situations where it's not pikuach nefesh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or where I do have other options. Leah?
I still think it's rare to go to a non-Jew because, let's say you go to a Jewish doctor, it's you and the Jewish doctor who is doing malacha, whether the patient is doing malacha or not. But if you go to a non-Jewish doctor, even if you are messiah, it's only you, yourself, the patient, not like a Jewish doctor.
So you're just saying it's still better with a non-Jewish doctor than a Jewish one. I hear that. But the question is it even an issue? is my role significant if all I'm doing is providing this kind of assist? Like I said, we may discuss this. I just wanted to raise the point because I think it is something that needs to be discussed at some point in it. Okay, it is now, I don't trust that clock, but it's actually right. It's 11:19, so we are going. Okay, back to dentistry. We are going to incise gums. Shh. Okay. So that was all the discussion about a cholesh yesh bo sakana, or call it safek pikuach nefesh, is maybe more accurate. And I'm planning on coming back to the malacha shenitzvicha legufa and the bleeding thing. I'm going to bring a couple of sources on it, I think, next time. It's worth more discussion. But I want to move into a question that we actually started discussing because the question was raised. What about sakanas aver? The possibility of considering a dental emergency a risk to loss of a body part if we're talking about losing a tooth. So, quick review of sakanas aver. We said aver is a body part. It does not have a clear definition. It is not a limb. It is not an organ. But it is a discrete unit of the body. Sakana, there is a danger that it will no longer function properly in the future. Not like temporarily, but it will not function properly in the future without whatever intervention it is that we're talking about. So we said that this is more than a cholesh she'ein bo sakana, but less than a cholesh yesh bo sakana. We said it's more than a cholesh she'ein bo sakana. Why? We gave two reasons. Yeah?
Because it would be forever losing a part of your body.
That right, because it's permanent damage. And, yeah?
Is it that it might actually be dangerous?
Right, it can lead to danger. It may be dangerous now, it may lead to danger. So for both of those reasons, it's more than a cholesh she'ein bo sakana, but it's not a cholesh yesh bo sakana. It's not like we know of any danger. And we said that what are you allowed to do for such a person? What are you allowed to do on Shabbos? Yeah.
You could violate by Rabbanan about a shinui.
Correct. Exactly. You do a derabanan, or non-Jew does a deoraisa. So does losing an adult tooth qualify as sakanas aver? That's our big question. Those who were here when we did first semester, I actually discussed it as an illustration of sakanas aver. I don't think I did that when we did for the second semester. I think I dropped that. But two arguments against counting this as sakanas aver. First argument is it's not an aver. Meaning, when we talked about avarim originally, I mentioned to you there's a Mishnah in Ahalos that catalogs the 248 avarim for a male. It does, and then there's a 252, I think, for a female. And if you look at that list, teeth are not there. They're not on the list. So assuming aver is actually whatever's on that list, then a tooth is not an aver at all. Rav Wozner adds a point. Take a look at source number 9. Mishnah in Ahalos as well. Kol shebemeis tameh. All parts of a dead body communicate tumah. Chutz min hashinayim v'hasear v'hatziporen, except for teeth, hair, and nails. Meaning, if they are separated from the body, they don't communicate tumah. When they're attached to the body, they do. But if they're separated from the body, they no longer communicate tumah. So, yeah. I mean, you look at source number 9. It's right there. The, yeah. Why would you? Right. So washing your hair from cutting your nails wouldn't necessarily have to do with tumas meis, because the person who's cutting their nails is not dead. Hopefully. This is tumas meis that we're talking about. That the whole business of washing with nail cutting is a good discussion beyond this, but yeah, this is tumas meis that we're talking about here. So one argument to say it's not an aver is it's not an aver as far as tumah is concerned, because it doesn't communicate tumah if it comes from a dead body. The other argument for why it's not sakana sever is that there's no resulting permanent dysfunction, which may depend a little bit on which tooth a person loses. But take a look at source number 10, a comment by the Netziv, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, commenting on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that talks about Makas HaChalal and all of that. HaChoshesh B'shinav Lo Yigameya Bohenes HaChometz. The Gemara says, if a person has a toothache on Shabbos, they should not rinse their teeth with vinegar. Don't gargle with vinegar because that's considered medical treatment. This is not talking about somebody who has a toothache that could actually be dangerous and so on. This is a person who has a mechosh. They're in a little pain. So they're not allowed to use vinegar. That's no good. Hiksha echad ben achaverim sheyichye. So he says, one of the students asked the question. Remember that the Netziv was the last Rosh Hashiva of Volozhin. So maybe he's talking about one of the Talmidim in Yeshiva. I don't know. Dil mahavi sakanas ever. Why are we not worried that the danger, that the whatever's going on with the tooth could be, you know, potentially a risk to the tooth? Why isn't this sakanas ever? Venera ledayek mikan. So the Netziv says you could conclude from here. De sakanas ever eino ella sheino yachol lemal os chesrono. He says sakanas eber means that there is a loss that is going to be suffered, which cannot be supplemented in any way. So a person loses an eye, we don't say, well, you can still look out of the other eye, because depth perception is a thing. Being able to see out of two eyes is much better than being able to see out of one eye. So we don't say to them, well, that's all right, you just use the other eye. But a person is missing one tooth. He can still chew with the other teeth. As I said, your mileage may vary. It depends which tooth. But you know, there are teeth that are, you know, more used in chewing. But nonetheless, his overall point is there is no permanent dysfunction. In this case, I mean, it may also depend. Like maybe this person has a streak of losing their teeth on Shabbos, and like the first time round, you could say that to them. But like the fifth or sixth time, it's already an issue. Yeah.
I thought you were gonna say before you said the thing about how you can use your other teeth to chew. I thought you were gonna say like it can be supplemented in the way that.
Good.
It could be.
So that's fixed. A second argument, right? That's a second argument that is brought. And that is that it's not sakanas eiver because we have false teeth. Like they exist, and they're, you know, the technology in terms of fitting them into a person's mouth and making sure that they function well and so on is certainly not where it was in the days of George Washington. So therefore you should be you should just use that.
Right, but I have a follow-up question.
Yes.
Couldn't you say the same thing about any body part though, that it could be supplemented?
I think not.
Like, for example, if you have to, chassidically, you lost your leg due to something. There's, technology that exists nowadays, like mechanical legs and machinery that helps you walk.
Right. So I don't think anybody today would look at the state of prosthetics and say a prosthetic leg is the equivalent of having a normal leg.
Right.
With teeth, I think, you know, there are an awful lot of people walking around with replacement teeth.
Yeah.
You know? I think that is a thing. I'm not calling anybody out. I wouldn't equate that. You know, one day maybe the technology gets there. I don't know, but I wouldn't equate it based on what we have, you know, these days. Other questions? There was another question. These are both arguments against including it. The argument, on the other hand, in favor of including it as sakanas eiver is twofold as well. If you take a look at source number 11 from an article in the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society by Rabbi Dr. Tendler and Dr. Fred Rosner, since the jaw is an eiver and the absence of teeth interferes with its proper functioning, you notice what they did. The tooth isn't an eiver, but the jaw is an eiver of the body. And the fact that it doesn't have a tooth, now it's not going to function properly. And since the reimplantation of those teeth would restore the proper functioning of the jaw, put the tooth back in, and now the jaw functions right, the traumatic avulsion of teeth, avulsion is You can tell by the context. No, removal. The traumatic avulsion of teeth represents a situation of chesron aver. As far as they are concerned, the jaw is the aver in this, not the tooth. So when you tell me tooth doesn't appear on the list, my answer is, okay, but jaw does, which is true. Clear? That's argument number one, to count it as sakanas aver. Argument number two comes from Rabbi Rafael Evers, a Rav in Rotterdam, in Holland, in source number 12. He says, Masha kasa, that which the Netziv said, that you can chew with your other teeth, losing one tooth is not sakanas aver because you can chew with your other teeth. He says, that's shocking to me. The collection of teeth that you have, he says, Harehu harkava shel kama vekama shinayim shenis havim leguf echad. He says, your teeth are an assembly of individual teeth, which collectively enable you to chew. So how do you distinguish between one tooth and all of his teeth? He says, none of the teeth were created for nothing. All of the teeth have a role in the way that you chew. And there will be a difference in the quality of your chewing. That's his argument. There are other ways you could potentially take it, but these are two arguments against saying it's sakana sever, and two arguments for saying that it's a sakana sever, which means that in the event that, God forbid, this happens to anybody here, you need to know what your Rav paskins. In an actual circumstance, the psak may end up being dependent upon the people who are involved, what their level of need is. It's legitimate for a Rav to say they have in front of them somebody who lost their tooth, who's somebody perhaps of, you know, a fragile emotional state to begin with, who would be very affected by this. Or you have a trying to figure out how to do this without getting into any stereotyping. All right, that's hard. I'm not going to. But you can imagine for yourself, there are people in different situations in life for whom losing a tooth is dramatically worse than it is for other people. So the psak may well vary depending on the case at hand. You might say, you know what, for this, I can rely on what Rabbi Tandler, Dr. Rosner wrote, even if the logic that the Netziv brings is more appealing to me. You follow? They're both legitimate positions. Clear? Yes? Okay. So what are the treatment options when a tooth has been lost? Like, what are our choices? What can we do? So I'm not a dentist. I stress that again. But I talk to dentists. So my understanding, and we'll actually see Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham say this in number 14, my understanding is that if you reseat the tooth within half an hour and you hold it in place, it will be possible for the tooth to take. Like, you can actually do that. I'm told that you can drink while you still have the tooth in place. Like, you won't like starve for the rest of Shabbos. And then after Shabbos, they can apply whatever they need to apply to hold it in place. There's also this whole thing about putting the tooth in milk. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah,
that's a cool thing. As cool as it gets anyway in this story. But yeah, Ray.
I guess it's more of a personal story about the tooth being re-put in. Is that one time I was on a trampoline and not halfway knocked one of my teeth out. This is on Shavuos. And we moved it back into place and kind of just held it there, and it's still been there and hasn't been the last 8 years.
Great. Okay. The same. What is it with trampolines and Shavuos?
Not trampoline, but. I fell off of the bed and I smashed it against my nightstand, I guess, and the whole thing came out. I didn't break. And the whole thing came out. And we didn't know what to do, and it was like Rosh Hashanah, no, not Rosh Hashanah, like Sukkot, I think. And it was our first year here, and we just didn't know what to do. And it was like second day, so we weren't keeping them yet. So my parents looked up online, like, what do we need to do? And we, like, put it in milk, and then my mom just, like, pushed it into place, and we, and it worked out, and then I had to go to the dentist for, like, years, but. No, but it worked out. I still have my girl, too.
Right.
But.
Moral of the story is don't have bedroom furniture. That's or trampolines, right? If you stay away from those.
Or softball. I was playing softball.
Okay, so we're just running out the clock, aren't we? The everybody's dental stories. So the key question that you have to ask in this scenario, and that at this point we're going to have to start on, you know, next time, is what is the status of reseating a tooth? Is this potentially a prohibition of bone construction on Shabbos by putting a tooth back in somebody's mouth?
Can it also be?
Well, as we've said, bone and makabe patish go together. They go together.
Right.
You know, but I would prefer bone as clearer than makabe patish. But we'll see. That'll be the discussion, God willing, on Monday. For reference, just to let everybody know, so Monday will be probably just straight topic, like which can be learning, and then probably Wednesday will be quiz on dental stuff. That would be my guess.
Thank you.
Thank you.